Are you someone who, faced with retiring from your job, feels glee or dread? It's one of the most massive changes you face to the way your life functions. The opportunities to live a life of freedom and ease are there for sure. So too are the possibilities of loneliness and irrelevancy. So how to have the former rather than the latter? Michael Longhurst is an organisational psychologist whose research into this, in his retirement, has resulted in a handbook of ideas and strategies and resources called Enjoying Retirement. Michael, hi, nice to have you with us.
Hello, Amanda.
Let's start with the retirement honeymoon period, Michael. What's going on and what happens when the honeymoon's over?
Right. Well, the honeymoon period can last anywhere between 3 months and a year. It's that immediate time after retiring where for most people, there's this intoxicating feeling of total freedom and I'm now on a huge holiday. So that's wonderful. And during that time, things like, you know, golf and fishing and all those recreational activities will
keep
them going.
All those books you want to read.
All those books you want to read. That's right. So many people have said that. You know, I've got this great list of books. I just didn't have time to read it in a workplace. But in fact, if you spent your entire retirement just reading those books and doing the recreational activities, it wouldn't work because, you know, if you look at the word recreation, it comes from recreate, and it's where you're recreating or re-energizing yourself after stresses such as work. So, you know, that gives you a balance when you're at work, but if that's all there is in retirement, then you're not probably going to be all that happy.
Well, I've heard also particularly women say that they know the honeymoon period's over when they've cleaned out their last cupboard and then they start looking up and around. But does it mean, Michael, that, you know, ticking off those few those things that you've thought about facing retirement that you want to do, the books, the fishing, the golf, the cupboards, does that mean we tend not to be well prepared for retirement in the sense of what you are going to do with your time post that honeymoon period?
Yeah, look, most people don't prepare for what they're going to do in retirement. I mean, there are a lot that do, but most don't. And the reason for that is the people, if you ask somebody who's about to retire, well, you know, what are you going to do? They say, well, look, I've got my health, you know, I'm in reasonably good health. We've figured out we've got enough money to get by. So what do you mean? What else do I need to do? I mean, surely that's all there is. go on.
Well, I wonder too, does the way that you face retirement depend on sort of your push factors? Like, you know, if you were retrenched, if you didn't want to stop working, or if you've retired on your own terms?
Yeah, look, that's an important question because during the research, we actually, with the initial group of people, we did some psychological testing and then looked at retirement-related anxiety, depression and stress, and those people who were forced to retire early didn't travel as well as a lot of their more planned people who could, well, not more planned, but could actually get to the end of their plan. And part of that was because sometimes people had been aiming to, you know, pay off a mortgage. They'd worked out that in 3 years' time when they retired, they'd be debt-free. Then all of a sudden, the axe comes down metaphorically, and they don't have time necessarily to complete those financial issues. There's also then the sense of, you know, well, why me, the rejection, particularly where after they've been retrenched, they look back and see people who they perhaps believe were, you know, less able or not as hardworking as themselves continuing on. So it's a whole range of factors there.
So what's your advice for people in that circumstance to be able to sort of move into a retirement and feel comfortable about it?
Yeah, look, pretty much the same advice as I'd give to people who've retired happily and have just emerged from the other end of the honeymoon period where they're starting to think, well, hang on, I better have a look around. What am I doing? You know, I can't waste my life like this. So the advice is simply this, that when you leave work, even if you've hated your job, there will be aspects to it that you that were rewarding, and that can simply be things like the fact that you had a few people there at work that you liked, you know, that you had a chat to on Monday around the coffee machine or something. It could also be the fact that you felt secure in that you had a sense of structure to your day. You knew what you had to do. You got up at a certain time, went to work, and that was all looked after for you. And then there were the whole plethora of work-related benefits that people have, whether it's managing people or whether it's planning or whether it's just doing something you've been trained for. So what we then say to people is, okay, have a think about what it was that you enjoyed at work, then start looking around for activities, purposeful activities as opposed to recreational activities, and perhaps I'll explain that in a minute, but look around for activities that embody those qualities that you like.
Yeah, so we'll get onto that sort of purposeful versus recreational activities in a moment, Michael. But it occurs to me too as you're talking. What about if you've had a senior position and some sort of status at work? How do you manage the loss of that in retirement, you know, without bossing everyone you come across around?
Yeah, well, that is a major issue. Historically, it's been men who've had this problem, and naturally, of course, these days, and the women are rising up into management circles too, into upper management circles and on boards and all this sort of thing. So it really depends on the individual how much they're saying. Let's say we're talking about the chairman of the board of a director or something. It really depends how much they're saying, I am the chairman of the board, or I work as the chairman of the board. I know that sounds a bit picky, but it really depends on how much identity they lose when they retire. So if that's the sort of person that is retiring, then what they can do is they can join their local golf club, but instead of just knocking the white ball around the green, they can get onto the committee and say, well, look, I've got these skills. I managed a company for such and such years. I've got these skills. I would like to get, put myself up for election to the committee, where I can also now give my abilities at planning, my abilities at designing strategy, things like that. I can give them a run here in retirement.
Yeah. Well, we have a text that's just come in saying, in relation to this person's parents, after the honeymoon period, both my parents started volunteering 3 days a week, still enjoying it. So let's talk about the differences in finding purposeful activities over recreational activities, Michael. What is the difference?
Okay, so, well, recreational activities are just that. They are the things you do just to, just have a bit of a break. You know, playing golf, again, is the classic one that a lot of retirees aim for. But that won't, as I say, that won't sustain you just that won't sustain you. So purposeful activities are activities where you either are producing something. So, for example, there was this tool maker who was a member of a vintage car or veteran car club, and he would actually make parts of cars that were no longer available for his mates. And so he had a great, he was using a skill that he was trained for. He was very much in demand, and so he had the social contact. He had the ability to use a skill for which he was trained, and he was providing a worthwhile outcome for these people. So that's one thing. Then you've got the act of providing a service, and this can either be a part-time job, paid job, or it can be volunteering, which is very popular. So many people do this, and it's such a wonderful thing. And then the third category of purposeful activity that we found is where people get involved in self-improvement in some way. So they might do either quite a long course. I mean, there's some people well into their 80s, not that heavy on the ground, but there are some people in their 80s actually doing PhDs, which is just fabulous. But more common is doing things like courses through U3A, which is the University of the Third Age, where they might do a course on yoga, on photography, or on line dancing, anything.
Or anything, really, presumably learning a language, whatever. Hey, is something like gardening, would you class that as a recreational or purposeful activity?
Well, actually, it can be a purposeful activity, but more likely it's what I'd call a maintenance activity. If you're just gardening, you know, cutting the grass and doing a bit of trimming here and there just to keep the things at bay, which, you know, on Sunshine Coast where I live, you really need to do this quickly. You're overtaken. But on the other hand, there are people who grow, you know, prize petunias or the biggest pumpkin they can possibly grow and enter that into contests.
Woman, making it competitive?
Yeah, that's right. So there's a purpose at the end of it, because in July I'll be going to the such and such show with my pumpkin, and so this becomes they might be in a sort of a club, if you like. But there was also one woman on the research whose husband had achieved a lot in his life. He was well known in the community, and she set up a garden, like a memorial garden, to him, and people would come and visit this. And so that was another example of where the gardening had a purpose.
Here in Life Matters, preparing for life post-work. And it'd be great to get your tips and cautions about retirement too. If it's on the horizon for you, what are you most looking forward to and perhaps most apprehensive about? Have you got a game plan? You can post your comment on Facebook. We're at ABCRN Life Matters. Michael Longhurst is a former organisational psychologist who runs seminars for people who are retired or about to retire. Michael, if you have a partner, the retirement of either of or both of you is going to inevitably change the relationship. You know, you're suddenly spending a lot more time together. How do you make that a positive, not a negative?
That came up quite a lot. There was a syndrome we found called the underfoot husband. Now, as hard as I could look, and I was desperate to find an underfoot wife because I thought, well, I've got to get some balance here, but unfortunately I couldn't. So I think what tends to happen is that people have progressed and matured differently in their lives. Sometimes, you know, you marry somebody in your 20s, then they both go to work perhaps, and one person develops more than the other because they're stretched by having to get higher up the company or whatever. Then on the day they retire, they've all of a sudden they're thrown together 24/7, and a lot of people find it's difficult to adjust to that. You know, they've been able to make their own decisions at work. They're looking forward to the freedom now of retirement, where they can make their own decisions about what they're going to do with retirement. But they have to then fit in with their partner.
Yes. Yeah, so how do you make that adjustment successfully?
I've actually written a whole lot about this on the issues of communicating, how to communicate without causing World War III. It is an area that some people struggle with, and just simply the fact that some people don't want to be in the other person's face all the time. They want to, you know, they don't want to be yakking away all day. They want to perhaps get away and recharge their batteries with a book, and they need to be able to assertively, not aggressively, of course, but assertively say, well, look, you know, I really do need a bit of time to myself. Nothing against you, but I really do need just, you know, an hour, a couple of hours a day to get away by myself or go out, you know, for coffee with my friends or whatever. So it's a matter of learning to deal with that if it is an issue, deal with that communication problem if it is an issue.
What about particular issues for single people when they retire? Mm.
Yep. Well, and of course, a lot of people do retire as single people. It really depends whether if you have somebody who's been single, you know, for many, many years or even all of their life, they have usually developed strategies for dealing with loneliness, for meeting people, and they've possibly got their act together a bit better, so that when they retire, really it's a matter of just carrying on those strategies and, you know, joining up with clubs and things like that. Where the most difficulty comes is where somebody loses their partner either through divorce or they've passed away, either close to retirement or closely after retirement. And these people, you know, are often then not just dealing with that major life transition, but perhaps going through, going through grief, and that complicates matters. That makes the process harder. So, you know, they need to deal with that possibly by getting some professional help if that's the case, and certainly drawing on friends and family for support if they've got.
Well, we have another text that's come in from Murray in Tasmania, who says, "I retired at 55 in 1999. It's been wonderful. Don't know how I ever had time to go to work. A couple of overseas trips, built a couple of boats, a few hundred Ks as grey nomad, never looked back. Go for it," he says. So there you go. Mm. Michael Longhurst is a former organisational psychologist who's researched all these issues around retirement. Enjoying Retirement is his handbook for how to prepare for that phase of life. Michael, it's great to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And do share with us any advice you can offer too about how to enjoy a fulfilling retirement, or what you're doing by way of preparing for retirement. What's your game plan? Comment on Facebook. You're listening to Life Matters.